I'm Tara Mergener. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, paying the price. The world reacts after President Trump unveils reciprocal tariffs. We're at the White House. Moving forward, Senate Republicans unveil their long-awaited budget resolution as lawmakers move to draft a reconciliation bill. Devastating storms. Severe weather tears through the United States, spawning multiple tornadoes. We have the latest. And technology and humanity. Learn all about the Holy Father's prayer intention for the month of April. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
And thank you so much for being with us. Our top story tonight. One day after President Donald Trump announces sweeping new reciprocal tariffs, the White House says the USA is no longer going to be cheated by foreign nations around the world. And world leaders are reacting as they absorb this new reality. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Well, Tara, good evening to you. The markets took quite a beating today. The Dow down nearly 4%. The Nasdaq down nearly 6%. The White House message to Wall Street, trust in President Trump.
On the south lawn of the White House, heading for Florida, President Donald Trump, before boarding Marine One, stops to address reporters about his new tariff plan.
I think it's going very well. It was an operation, like when a patient gets operated on. And it's a big thing. I said this would exactly be the way it is. We have $6 or $7 trillion coming into our country, and we've never seen anything like it. The markets are going to boom. The stock is going to boom. The country is going to boom.
And today on the North Lawn, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said President Trump has made it very clear
that this is a policy he was going to implement. He campaigned on the idea of fair trade, on tariffs, and nearly 80 million Americans elected him to do it, and he is delivering.
With its sweeping tariffs around the globe, as displayed in the White House press briefing room, country after country on the long list, no shortage of global reaction.
President Trump called it Liberation Day, and I will call it Inflation Day.
Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni cleared her schedule today to focus on the fallout. She argues Trump's tariffs do not benefit any of the parties involved. Other countries also speaking out.
Ireland believes in open and free trade and that the imposition of tariffs is bad for the world economy.
Tariffs aren't the best news, but I hope that this is an opening to a fruitful negotiation.
And outside the West Wing, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins told EWTN.
I know we're hearing from countries that are kind of complaining about what's happening, but I have a chart. This is sort of shows you the exports of other countries, India, Taiwan, Japan. This is the average, 14%. Well, down here, you've got little bitty United States of America, right? I mean, this is what he's trying to fix.
Now, the import taxes range from 10% all the way up to 49%. And of note, left off the reciprocal tariff list, Vatican City. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Owen, thank you. Joining us now is Michael Strain, Director of Economic Policy Studies and the Arthur F. Burns Scholar in Political Economy at the Enterprise Institute. Michael, thank you for being here. So much discussion surrounding these tariffs the Trump administration has rolled out. The White House says the decline of manufacturing in the U.S. has hurt the country and that these tariffs will bring that industry roaring back to life. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think the president's diagnosis is wrong. Manufacturing output in the United States is near an all-time high. It is true that manufacturing employment as a share of total employment is down, but that has been declining for the last 7 decades. And the reason is because of advances in productive technology. And so I think the president's just fundamentally confused about a number of these issues. In addition, the policy that he put in place, these tariffs, it's not going to bring back manufacturing employment. It's going to hurt U.S. manufacturers, not help them. And so even if you agree with the president's diagnosis, this policy is going to make the situation worse, not better.
You know, when looking at President Trump's auto tariffs, the president of the United Auto Workers Union, Sean Fain, says he is in favor of these measures. He also says that his organization has begged Democrats and politicians for years to get these auto companies in line. What do you make of that support?
Well, I think you know, a lot of things go into the decision of a union leader to support policies of a particular administration. Look at the car companies, look at their stock prices, look at whether or not they're adding workers or laying off workers, look at the costs of production that they face. That'll tell you a lot more than what a labor union leader says.
Now, meanwhile, the United Steel Workers Union says tariffs can be effective tools of reining in some bad actors exploiting the U.S. market. But it also adds that it's got to be paired with wider trade reform. So what kind of reform could that look like?
I mean, I think when you're talking about steel, it's important to note that there will be some winners from President Trump's policies. But for every one job in America producing steel, there are 80 manufacturing jobs in America that use steel. And so the company that employs that steel producer might be made better off. 80 other workers who work for other manufacturing firms are going to be made worse off. And that's, I think, the kind of context needed when looking at any specific industry or specific company.
Okay, now quickly, we've got less than a minute left. Automaker Stellantis has temporarily halted production at a plant in Mexico as well as Canada in response to those auto tariffs. The announcement will result in the temporary layoff of about 900 U.S. employees. What say you?
This is what happens when you raise the cost of doing business. This is what happens when you create enormous uncertainty about the future path of those costs mm-hmm. that businesses will face. And we're going to see a whole lot more of this until the president reverses course.
All right, Michael Strang, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Meanwhile, senior Republican lawmaker Chuck Grassley introduces new legislation aimed at giving Congress more power over tariffs. If the bill passes, it would require the president to notify lawmakers about new tariffs within 48 hours, explaining the reasoning and potential impact of the move. Congress would then need a joint resolution of approval of the tariffs within 60 days or they would expire. Well, the number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits fell a bit last week. Jobless claims dropped by 6,000 for the week, ending March 29th. And this comes as the federal government carries out layoffs in key offices. Despite showing some signs of weakening, the labor market remains healthy after U.S. employers added 151,000 jobs in February. The March jobs report is set for release tomorrow. Well, Senate Republicans unveiled their new budget blueprint, paving the way for the Senate and GOP-controlled U.S. House to finally advance key items of the president's agenda. But getting it over the finish line will not be easy. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has been following the latest, and he joins us with more.
Good evening, Tara. The 70-page budget resolution is just a blueprint directing congressional committees to be able to craft their own proposals to hit the spending targets. Now, this is the necessary first step in the process of getting a much larger bill passed. Senate Majority Leader John Thune says he's confident Republicans in the House and Senate can get the job done.
This resolution is the first step toward a final bill to make permanent the tax relief we implemented in 2017 and deliver a transformational investment in our border, national, and energy security, all accompanied by substantial savings measures and common sense reforms to our government.
Some of the highlights of the resolution include earmarking roughly $175 billion for new border security, $150 billion in defense spending, raising the debt ceiling by $5 trillion, identifying at least $4 billion in government spending cuts, making 2017 tax cuts permanent using accounting that makes the cost $0. But Democratic leader Chuck Schumer accuses Republicans of fudging the tax numbers and adds it will create an economic disaster.
If they go through current policy baseline, it will increase the deficit on the United States by $30 trillion, virtually doubling it. And who's going to pay the price? Us, our children, our grandchildren.
Republicans who worked on the resolution disagree.
We're using what's called current policy so that we make sure that these tax cuts are permanent. That is vital, not only for, you know, investment long term, but you'll see more growth and more revenue, which helps close the deficit and debt.
Republicans add the increased funding for our military is critical to national security.
So being able to find another $150 billion to plus up our defense budget at a time when so much is required of us, I think it's a winning formula.
We need to get something good passed before Easter. I think the American people are getting restless. They want to see us deliver. We've done a lot of good things with a razor-thin majority, but, you know, enough. It's time to deliver, and I think that's where the people are.
Senator Thune says he plans to pass the resolution over this weekend. And then over in the House, Speaker Mike Johnson says he will work beginning on the resolution next week. Both leaders hope that Congress will pass a final budget resolution by Easter. And the next step will be drafting a massive bill with President Trump's agenda. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, Eric, thank you. Now to the Middle East, where dozens are dead following Israeli airstrikes across the Gaza Strip. This comes a day after senior government officials said Israel would seize large areas of Gaza and establish a new security corridor across the territory. Separately, the military ordered residents of several areas to evacuate. Meanwhile, Syrian state media reports several were killed by Israeli airstrikes in the southwestern region of the country. Now to Brussels, where Secretary of State Marco Rubio attended his first foreign ministers meeting at NATO, facing criticism over U.S. support of its allies.
That the United States is in NATO. We are an active, as we speak right now, the United States is as active in NATO as it has ever been. But we want NATO to be stronger. We want NATO to be more viable. And the only way NATO can get stronger and more viable is if our partners, the nation states that comprise this important alliance, have more capability.
All right, amid a slew of new global tariffs, allies are weary of Trump's plans for security in Europe. Rubio says the U.S. will expect all allies to pay 5% in defense spending, placing security back in the hands of Europeans. NATO is set to discuss threats coming from Russia, China, and North Korea over the next 2 days. A senior Russian negotiator is in Washington, D.C. this week. He's meeting with top Trump official Steve Witkoff. Kirill Dmitriev is talking to Witkoff about strengthening relations between the U.S. and Russia. This is the aim to end the war in Ukraine. This is the first time a Russian official has visited the U.S. since the war started in 2022. So joining us now is Rebecca Koffler, author of Putin's Playbook and host of the Censored But Not Silenced podcast. Rebecca, thank you for joining us. First off, what do we know about Kirill Dmitriev? Who is he, and how high up the chain is he in the Russian hierarchy?
He is on the exact Russian hierarchy. He's not very high, but he is very close to Putin. His title is basically the head of the Russian Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is effectively a direct foreign investment fund. Kirill Dmitriev holds a lot of political capital, both with Putin and within the Trump administration, because he is actually educated in the United States, and he worked for Goldman Sachs, as well as he ran a private equity firm that is the U.S. In Russia, that is backed by the U.S. And so Putin's goal is to use Kirill Dmitriev to repair the relations with the United States that suffered during the Biden administration.
Now, President Trump recently expressed frustration with Russian President Vladimir Putin over his criticisms of Ukraine's president. On Tuesday, Russia rejected the U.S. proposal for a ceasefire in the ongoing war. Are tensions flaring again between the two countries?
Absolutely. Russia is not interested in a ceasefire. Putin stated many times that a ceasefire would only give what we call a strategic pause in military doctrine to the opponent. Right now, Russia holds the upper hand both on the battlefield and from the overall correlation of forces and combat potential standpoint. Combat potential is a combination of the size of the armed forces, the size of the weapons arsenal, the military-industrial complex's ability to scale up production, and the defense economics. And so even NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte himself admitted that Russia produces in 3 months more military hardware than the entire NATO alliance, the United States including, produces in 1 year. So for Putin, there's no reason to conduct the ceasefire. He wants to finish the job because he doesn't really trust Washington. He doesn't trust Washington. He doesn't trust Trump any more than we trust him.
All right. Interesting. Now we've got just less than 60 seconds left. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is in Belgium talking to NATO allies and assuring them of U.S. support, but he's also demanding they pay more for defense. In the eyes of Russia, how does the relationship between the U.S. and Europe look now? Final thoughts.
It looks like the relationship is pretty much the same. NATO, the Russians are not looking at words, they're looking at actions. And the Russians know that the NATO in totality is probably not going to pay 5%. Mm-hmm. NATO actually had the entire 10 years to develop a counter strategy to Putin's playbook. I personally briefed NATO in 2013, September, just month prior to Putin's invasion of Crimea. I laid out at the highly classified level Putin's thinking, Russia's warfighting strategy, and yet NATO decided that they're just going to throw Ukrainians into Putin's meat grinder, using them effectively as human shields because they were not willing to beef up their force posture and pay for their own security. So President Trump is now pushing them to finally step up.
All right, Rebecca, a lot of moving parts here. Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
Well, we have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Lightly, including tragedy at sea. Dozens are dead after boats carrying migrants sinks off the coast of Greece. And powerful storms bring tornadoes and power outages across the U.S. Find out what could be next. More than a dozen are dead after two boats carrying migrants sinks in the Aegean Sea off the coast of Greece and Turkey. The two accidents reportedly occurred several hours apart in good weather. Thousands of migrants often make this trip every year, fleeing the Middle East to seek entry to the European Union and Greece. However, it's not uncommon for boat accidents like this one to occur. The Greek Coast Guard reported arresting one survivor on suspicion for smuggling those migrants. At least six are dead and thousands without power after severe storms tear through parts of the South and Midwest. A strong line of those storms moved through the region last night, bringing high winds, tornadoes, and flooding. Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, and Indiana saw some of the worst of the weather, and the threat isn't over as storms are forecasted through the weekend. Joining us now to break this all down and what could be coming next is Weather Nation meteorologist Jesse Kelly. Jesse, thanks for joining us. We know the bulk of these storms moved through the region last night. Just how bad was this?
Well, you know, it was a very bad evening. We had, unfortunately, a lot of tornadoes out there across portions of Arkansas and Tennessee. We just got some new information about a few preliminary ratings for some of those tornadoes back towards the west. You may have heard some of these cities, like Lake City, Arkansas, is where we had a tornado emergency that was just to the southeast of Jonesboro. Preliminary rating of the EF3 of winds of 150 miles an hour. And then early on Thursday morning, just towards the east of Memphis into southern Tennessee, near Selma, Tennessee, we had another EF3 tornado, preliminary rating of 160. But they had to suspend the survey because of more showers and thunderstorms. And the reason why is these same areas from Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, all the way into the Ohio Valley will see more thunderstorms over the next couple of days. It's because of this huge area of high pressure, a blocking high, which is pretty much just slowing the storms from moving from west to east. So until this blocking high breaks down, that will not occur until likely this Sunday. So that means we're going to see repeated rounds of showers and thunderstorms, severe weather, and unfortunately, possibly some really bad flooding. Here's the outlook when it comes to more strong to severe thunderstorms from East Texas all the way into the Ohio Valley and the Northeast the rest of tonight. Friday, same areas. We now have a moderate risk for seeing severe thunderstorms into Northeast Texas, most of Arkansas, eastern Oklahoma, and extends back up into the Ohio Valley. The same areas that were impacted on Wednesday and could be impacted again for tonight. And then as we head towards Saturday, we'll see everything slightly beginning to push more towards the east into portions of the deep south towards the Gulf Coast. And then by Sunday, we'll see everything, at least with a severe weather threat, begin to build more into Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. Now for today and tomorrow, we still have that significant threat for seeing possibly more strong tornadoes over some of these same areas. And the other big story that we have at play too is the flooding threat. So we have that high risk for flooding across portions of the Ohio River Valley, Mississippi River Valley, and notice how we're just going back and forth over these same river basins here over the next couple of days. So you live anywhere from Little Rock, Paducah, Cape Girardeau, Southern Illinois, St. Louis, Southern Indiana. If you have a game plan in place, you need to make sure that you have a way to find higher ground. If you live in a low-lying area that is prone to flooding, if I was you, I would probably try to find a loved one, a friend, that can get out that danger zone, because we can see over the next 5 days, this contour here is rainfall amounts that could be over 7 to 10 inches. And that's in addition to what is already falling across some of these areas as we speak right now. Here's the forecast. Here's the other problem that we have in place too. As I talked about earlier, we have that blocking high towards the east, system to the west. Look at our stall boundary. Notice how thunderstorms are just pretty much riding right all over these same areas. Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Missouri, these thunderstorms will slowly begin to push more towards the east as we head towards Saturday and Sunday. And then behind all this, maybe some snow taking place across areas of Kansas over towards Oklahoma to the panhandle. We have a flood watching effect too because of all this heavy rain that we have forecast. You can also see some of the ongoing flash flood warnings. Those are in the maroon boxes. These light green polygons, those are all rivers, creeks, streams that will soon possibly reach flood levels in the next couple of days, even over the next week or two, as all this heavy rain begins to drain down these major rivers. So it'll be something we're watching out for in the next couple of days. And we'll end with this map here. You can see across Arkansas, West Tennessee, into Western Kentucky, we can still see additional 5 to 10 inches of rain. So over the next couple of days, we need to be weather aware when it comes to severe thunderstorms and flash flooding. Remember, turn around, don't drown. Make sure you have multiple ways to receive alerts, as we could see more active weather even once the sun goes down between now through Sunday.
All right, Jesse, plenty to keep an eye on here. Thanks for joining us. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the fight for life. Pro-lifers make their voices heard outside of abortion clinics. We have details. Plus, learn why Pope Francis hopes we all spend more time with other people rather than on our cell phones. Protesters take to the streets in Nigeria. They're calling for improved security and an end to the abductions targeting the clergy. Specifically, they called for the enforcement of an anti-grazing law. They say that law would crack down on the activities of armed herdsmen suspected of carrying out these attacks. The bishops of Nigeria have continually challenged the government to prioritize the security of its citizens. Meanwhile, in America, pro-life protesters hold rallies outside of abortion clinics demanding an end to taxpayer-funded abortions. This happened yesterday, the same day as the Supreme Court heard arguments about the issue in South Carolina. The rallies were promoted by a coalition of pro-life organizations such as the Pro-Life Action League and Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. Last month, the Trump administration announced its plans to freeze more than $20 million in federal funds for Planned Parenthood. In a video message with his prayer intention for the month of April, Pope Francis shares his hope that new technologies will not replace human relationships.
¿Cuánto me gustaría que mirásemos menos la pantalla y nos mirásemos más a los ojos?
In the pre-recorded message, the Pope urges everyone to place technology at the service of the human person as a means of uniting people and helping those in need, instead of fostering hatred, exclusion, and inequalities. Pope Francis stresses that technology is the fruit of the intelligence God gave us, and that we must use it to respect the dignity of the person and help us face the crises of our time. Thank you so much for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tara Merchant. Good night, and God bless.